This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
This is the story of Leonardo da Vinci, one of the greatest geniuses who has ever lived. 500 years ago, he set out to try and find out all there was to know.
I will do things no one in the past has dared to do. I will think new thoughts, bring new things into being.
He created works of astonishing beauty, including the Mona Lisa, the most famous painting in the world. At the same time, he designed terrifying war machines, which spewed death and destruction. He designed ways of taking man to the bottom of the sea. He invented flying machines 400 years before man took to the skies. But for centuries, his vision has laid forgotten, written off as fantasy, and never put to the test. Leonardo was born in 1452, just outside the village of Vinci in Italy. His name means Leonardo of Vinci. He was born illegitimate, and this was to shape his life. Being a bastard, he was barred from learning Greek and Latin, the languages that all books at the time were written in. But he turned this to his advantage.
Leonardo had no use for the Greeks and the Romans and was very poorly educated, as you know, in their philosophies, and said that it's only by observation that we can find out the truth. And the Greeks and the Romans, my gosh, may have been wrong in some of their formulations, so let's look at it afresh. This is why we call him the first modern mind in history.
Good afternoon. You're listening to The Bigger Picture with me, Lee Chui Lin, and surprise, surprise, there's somebody else here.
Hello, Lin. It's me, Uma.
Yes, and you are not listening to a misplaced recording of Bookmark.
No, that's tomorrow at 2 p.m.
That is. Today we're paying tribute to Leonardo da Vinci. I guess the man that everybody knows as the modern Renaissance man, the inspiration of Dan Brown, the man responsible.
If we must.
Well, who knows? So we are paying tribute to him because today it is his birthday, 15th April.
561 years old.
He would appreciate mathematical accuracy.
Actually, he would, I think.
Yeah. Get your stuff together.
I know.
So, yes, today we're talking all things Leonardo. Why are you here?
I am here because I'm a big fan of Leonardo da Vinci, and I had done a lot of work on him. Actually, as part of my degree, I had written a thesis on one of his flying inventions.
Don't we all?
Yes. We did a little experiment. He invented, or in one of his sketchbooks, one of his coolest drawings was about this thing called the aerial screw, which is not about having sex on airplanes, but rather...
This is, I think, the fourth or fifth time that you're talking about sex on airplanes when that's not what we're talking about.
No, but, you know, it is called the aerial screw. Anyway, so it's one of the most... It's kind of the coolest designs that he's ever sketched. And I think a lot of people have seen this because if there's a book on Leonardo da Vinci or something, it's either an image of the Vitruvian Man or of this screw-like thing with, like, canvas around it. And it looks like the top bit of a weird helicopter, right? And the blades are kind of made out of linen. And if it turned fast enough, it should actually produce lift and fly. So we were trying to prove... in my little experiment, we tried to build one. And we were trying to prove whether it would actually work. The physics didn't, and... an actual aerial screw probably wouldn't work in practice, but it was something that's very cool and also betrayed an interesting study on the part of Leonardo himself, where he actually understood these laws of physics to a certain extent. He may not be where the Wright brothers were, and not all of his designs regarding to flight worked, but he was... Just imagine if that thing, it would be so cool if it did work, right?
There was a Leonardo da Vinci exhibition last year.
That's right, at the Science Museum.
Yeah, that's right. And we did the interview here on The Bigger Picture. And I went.
We did one on Evening Edition as
of
well.
Of course. And I went, and it was really, really great.
It was very, very cool. This was actually, it's part of a much larger exhibition that actually was doing
the rounds in
London and so on and so forth.
It was teensy, but it was enough for you to stay there for a couple of hours just marveling at stuff.
Mm.
And that's, I think that's a rarity in our modern day and age where you look at something that old and you stand there thinking, wow, and you're kind of transfixed at the, as you point out, you know, all these different things that you don't even understand today, so you're not sure how he understood like 600 years ago.
And I think that is one of the probably the biggest lessons from Leonardo da Vinci's life, right? It's this idea that, as the clip earlier showed, the little documentary clip about, you know, he wasn't well versed in Greek and Latin, and he said, you know, forget you guys, I'm going to actually do things through investigation and observation. And that's the greatest lesson that we can learn from Leonardo, because his entire life, starting from his experiments in art, and I say experiments because that's all he did, he experimented in different fields, kind of led up to this idea that everything was based on it. So his art, his study of the human form, his in actually doing that and painting that led him to actually want to know more. So then he was like, ah, how does biology and anatomy work? And then that led him on to then study the world around him. And he studied geology, paleontology, apart from medicine, biology.
And he practiced the scientific method, which I think is important to note.
Yes, he did, right? So it was, you know, laws of light, color, perspective aside, he then went on to, you know, build on that knowledge of the artist to become. That's why when people call him an artist, I feel it's kind of almost underwhelming, because he was so much more than that, right?
No, but see, that's, you know how he always made the point of art and science being of one.
Yes, of course.
No, so it's not. I don't know if that's fair to say that just calling him an artist is underwhelming, because he was an artist.
Oh, no,
he was a great artist.
He was, and a very good artist. But Leonardo da Vinci in himself, I don't think is that one individual in history that you cannot just classify with that one word. Like, that's why I think the word Renaissance man works so well. If you want to describe even a modern day Renaissance man, the first image that comes to people's mind is you're comparing him to Leonardo, right?
Leonardo, we're on first name basis.
We have to call him Leonardo, because Da Vinci just means of Vinci,
of Vinci,
right?
Yes. That guy told us, so now we know.
Yeah.
We should also mention that he was a grave robber.
Yes, he was, because he used to dissect bodies of humans and horses.
Mm-hmm. And that he basically designed, you know, the Batmobile. More or less.
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah.
No, but actually, interesting note as well. You know, there's no, like, people know nothing about his childhood, right? That guy did. Well, very
that
little.
Guy told us all about it.
Well, that's all they know, though. They know that he was an illegitimate child, which didn't bode well, clearly, because he wasn't allowed to study. His wife was someone, Katerina, his mother, who was
he
just
never
a
married.
Peasant girl. No, he never married. Actually, a very interesting book by Freud on Leonardo da Vinci, which is not a very big book. You can actually get through it quite quickly. It's about 60, 70 pages. But Freud actually goes into depth about as to whether or not he actually loved, and whether or not he loved men, even though...
Which is a very popular thesis.
It is. And also when he, towards the last days of his life, he actually lived with a young man. But of course, the consensus is that they did not actually have a sexual relationship. But because he actually, I think it's Francesco Melzi was the guy's name, and he actually attributed to he made him his heir, but they say it just may have been a really affectionate relationship. But Freud actually expounds on that a little more in his little book. But Freud says that one should not attribute to Leonardo da Vinci any high measure of sexual activity.
There is, what word am I searching for, where in Roman times, there would be a man would take a very young man under his
yes.
wing. And what's the word I'm looking for?
Not apprentice.
And then they would have a sexual relationship, but he would also teach him how to be a man and how to live.
Well,
and then, you know.
Well, you know, if you read, like in Plato's Republic, the idea of those kind of sexual relationships between men was something very commonplace, because that was how a man would learn how to be a man.
Precisely. No, right. So I'm just saying that I think we can't really kind of
judge him by today's standards
of
I guess,
what,
sexuality and
yeah,
morality and so
of
on
what
and
homosexuality would mean, of what, you know, a sexual relationship would be, because
yeah.
things were different.
No, I think Freud in his book actually goes, it is unknown whether Leonardo actually ever embraced a woman in love. I like that line.
That's a good phrase.
So Leonardo, you know what's interesting about this idea that, because it's quite taboo, and that's what I found fascinating about the Freud book, which was, you know, with great people in the past, and whenever we talk about them and think about their legacy, we don't attribute, or we don't like to talk about sex or their leanings or their loves as much.
That's because sex is very base, isn't it?
Correct. It's almost, well, it's not just base. It's almost like, oh, it's naughty and dirty, and we don't want to, you know, because every time someone mentions in a biography of Gandhi, for example, when they talk about Gandhi's sexual preferences or even Mandela, suddenly there's, you know, there are 10 the books banned in India, there are articles.
You know what it is? I think it's also the fact that people often think accurately that sex makes people stupid, and you don't necessarily want to think of your great minds. It's not necessarily engaging in dirty, naughty activity. It's just base. It's something that everybody does. It's a great equalizer. So who cares about Leonardo da Vinci having sex? We want to think of him building aerial screws as opposed to having aerial screws.
Well, no, you know, but the interesting thing about that is, of course, that Da Vinci might have felt that same way given his aversion or given his absorption into his own work, right? So there's a lot of theories about there's a tremendous absorption in his work, and you know, he would I think it was in his biography they wrote that, you know, he would, you know, walk in to do a painting and he would not leave until he would not eat, he would not drink, he would and leave until the wee hours, you know, when he would be not satisfied, because I don't think anything satisfied him, but you know, that at that point, I guess, when his body couldn't take it anymore, right? So he had no time for the baser human pleasures, or if you will. Yeah.
I think it's an interesting point about Leonardo and sex, simply because he was also very known for his drawings of anatomy. So it's for somebody to be so absorbed in, you know, the human body and not want to literally be absorbed in the human body. It's interesting.
And his drawings of anatomy are so accurate that they're actually used.
He was a grave robber.
Well, yeah, I know. All the more reason, right? But they actually used until today, right? I mean, they're that accurate. But, you know, we have more interesting sound bites.
We do. But that will be after our little break. We're talking about the life and lives and loves and works of Leonardo da Vinci right here on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
You're listening to BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Wow, this is amazing, Dad. The most famous painting in the world. It's inspiring, isn't it?
Inspiring? Of course it's inspiring. Because it's Indian!
No, Dad, not the Mona Lisa. She was an Italian noblewoman from the 16th century.
Son, this is Mina Losa. A Gujarati washerwoman from Bhavnagar.
No!
Yes! Look at the expression on her face. What is she thinking?
She is contemplating the irony of her situation, asking us whether we are observers or voyeurs.
Rubbish! She's asking how much is this painter charged, because my brother can get cheap paint.
Why would Leonardo da Vinci go all the way to Bhavnagar to paint someone?
Because it's quite near where he lived.
Florence?
Faridabad.
Leonardo's not Indian, Dad.
Of course he is, son. Look at this one.
What, the Last Supper?
Ah, 12 men sitting around the table for dinner. Where are the women? They're in the kitchen.
Good afternoon. Welcome back to The Bigger Picture. And today we are paying tribute to Leonardo da Vinci. That clip.
He's Indian.
That clip we just thought would be appropriate for today, considering that I've been joined in the studio by Uma Bhangan and PK Bhangan, and
we're
talking about all that stuff. So I thought that would be a nice introduction to art.
The Mona Lisa. And The Last Supper, of course. Mona Lisa was interesting. It was never actually given to the people who commissioned it. This is Mona Lisa is a very good example of, how do you say, Leonardo's
unfinishedness,
or you know, because he would the story goes that sometimes he would just spend days without putting his hand on a painting, right? And I think the Mona Lisa, when he worked for years on the portrait, which was the wife of the Florentine Di Gioconda, right? Mona Lisa, right?
Well, we're assuming that's who she is.
Yeah,
nobody really knows,
right? And so it was never delivered because it took too long. And I think Leonardo da Vinci actually took it with him to France, and that's why it was procured by a French king and put in the Louvre. That's what. Yeah.
Do we think it's Leonardo da Vinci?
As in.
Do we think the Mona Lisa is Leonardo da Vinci?
Oh, do we think that... Oh, no. Of course it's Leonardo da Vinci. I'm not buying into those conspiracy theories.
No, I meant, do we think it's a self-portrait?
Oh,
because there's that other theory, isn't there? That the Mona Lisa is Leonardo da Vinci in drag.
Yes. Now, I don't know about that either.
Now, see, the reason why I'm so aggressively interrogating this notion of the Mona Lisa is because I don't like it. There was one in the house of a primary school friend of mine, and every time I visited, I averted my eyes because she's so scary. I never liked the Mona Lisa.
It's because she's always following you. She knows what you're thinking, Lynn.
See, the thing is, that smile, that famous Mona Lisa smile, I think we should find a better phrase. Because does a Mona Lisa smile mean creepy? Because fair enough.
I think it's open to interpretation. I think it could mean creepy. I think it could mean loving. I think it could mean she knows exactly what you're thinking, Lynn.
So what I just said wasn't some stupid little art critique, but, you know, a deep-seated reading into the Mona Lisa smile? I'm going to say that?
I think so. Better than comparing it to Julia Roberts, that's for sure.
Who does that?
There are people after the film.
Those people are crazy.
I know they are, right?
Yeah, but...
His exploration, you know, he lost. Is it safe to say that he lost interest in art? There are some historians and biographers, you know, who think that in his moving on, art became a secondary priority. From, you know, his moving on to science and engineering and biology and all the other orgies he studied, right? But I don't think he actually ever lost interest in it. As in, from the readings, from reading his biographies and stuff, I always felt that he just thought it was an evolution of his work, you know, whether he's studying, whether the sun is actually stationary or moving, or to painting the Last Supper. I think all of that he felt kind of tied into one another. His study of the human body, his study of mechanics, somehow all worked together to influence and inform his art. So,
you know what I like about him as an artist, besides the art, it's also the fact that he doesn't fit the unhappy starving artist stereotype. He doesn't, you know, he's no, I'm going to cut my ear off and send it to a prostitute.
No.
He's no, I'm going to sit at home and wail until I can paint the petal.
No.
You know.
But at the same time, he was also unlike a lot of his colleagues at the time, who basically would just take commission after commission just to make money and become rich. So a lot of them did, right? I think Perugia, even Michelangelo, spending years on a painting and not fulfilling the commission, no one's going to give you that kind of money. So he was very interesting. He was a scientist. He was this kind of, money was irrelevant to him. He just, pursuit of his own thirst
interests.
For knowledge, right? And interest. And I don't know. Yeah, he would have been held the commission for anything. I think it would have just been a terrible delivering.
But he would have been a great dinner guest.
Oh, yes,
yeah,
for
so
sure.
You'd still have him round.
Yeah.
You know, you
yeah.
just won't give him jobs.
But it's interesting that Freud, in his book as well, would describe him as... I mean, he was a strong man. He was tall. He was, I guess, could be considered good-looking, you know. And so Freud actually described him as a kind of a manly man, if you will, right? I don't know
if we want to put too much stock in how Freud described Da Vinci.
Why do we not like Freud?
Not we. Go on.
Yeah, no. So in the book, Leonardo da Vinci, he says, you know, Leonardo da Vinci was admired even by his contemporaries as one of the greatest men of the Italian Renaissance. Still, even then, he appeared as mysterious to them as he now appears to us. An all-sided genius whose form can only be divined but never deeply fathomed. But what I like about that is the fact that, you know, he was as mysterious to his colleagues then as he is now. And I think a lot of that had to do with even his own chronicling of his work. He used to write in mirror images of his own writing. He's a weirdo, right? He used to write in mirror images, and then and his diaries were scattered all across Europe.
And of course, with paper being what it was and his writing being so cramped, I'm not sure mirror writing was even necessary for people to not be able to read what he did.
No, you're probably right.
But I don't know. I think, you know, we're talking a lot about different elements of our friend Leonardo simply because I think it's very hard to get to the essence of the man because he did so much work and he did so many different things. You know, so to describe him as an artist would leave you somewhat dissatisfied. To describe him as an inventor would leave a fan of the Mona Lisa, whoever they are, you know, somewhat...
What's the Last Supper?
Sure.
Yeah.
The Last Supper. That's fine. That's one that we can both like. But yeah. Do you want to talk about The Last Supper, since that clip talked about how there were no women?
Yes, I think he meant that they were all in the kitchen cooking dinner. Was that the end of the clip? Yes. Yeah, exactly. Because he's Indian. No. The Last Supper as well. I don't know. I love The Last Supper. I think it's a fantastic painting. You have this look on your face, Lynn.
I have a disagree? Look. No, not at all. I have a look because I have a clip here that's going to explain how Dan Brown saw The Last Supper.
Oh, please do.
Mm. Wait, please. You're saying the Holy Grail is a person? A woman?
And it turns out she makes an appearance. Right there.
But they're all men.
Are they? What about that figure on the right hand of our Lord, seated in the place of honor? Flowing red hair, folded feminine hands, hint of a bosom, no?
Incroyable.
Pas tout à fait. It's called scotoma. The mind sees what it chooses to see.
Who is she?
My dear, that's Mary Magdalene.
The prostitute?
She was no such thing. Smeared by the church in 591 Anno Domini Pudi. Mary Magdalene was Jesus' wife.
This is an old wives' tale.
The original one, in fact.
There's virtually no empirical proof.
He knows as well as I do. There's much evidence to support it.
Theories. There are theories.
Notice how Jesus and Mary are clothed. Mirror images of each other.
The mind sees what it chooses to see.
And venturing into the even more bizarre, notice how Jesus and Mary appear to be joined at the hip and are leaning away from each other as if to create a shape in the negative space between them. Leonardo gives us the chalice. Mm. Yes. Oh, and Robert, notice what happens when these two figures change position.
Just because Da Vinci painted it doesn't make it true.
No, but history, she does make it true.
So that was...
I'm convinced!
That was a clip from the movie based on the book by Dan Brown, The Da Vinci Code, which laid out definitive proof on all sorts of religious tales and how Da Vinci detailed everything. What I find to be most interesting about that clip is the fact that anything Ian McKellen says sounds authoritative.
True. Also, every time he says bosom, it makes me giggle. But with... You know, it's funny. I think the Da Vinci Code did more for Leonardo da Vinci in the modern era than almost no other book, right?
Isn't that sad?
It is, because after that, the amount of conversations and op-eds and reviews and even books that came out following it, the tours in Paris that they organized based on the Da Vinci Code. So for all the suckiness of that book, it did do some good, and I think it actually educated people on Leonardo and his works, right? So
on Bookmark tomorrow, listen to Uma talk about how Twilight revived vampires. Look, I think Dan Brown, he did do a lot for Leonardo da Vinci in the pop culture era, but I don't know if it was something that necessarily needed doing, simply because I think based on, if nothing else, the Mona Lisa and the Vitruvian Man,
yes,
we'd be talking about him forever.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. And the inventions, too. I mean, the inventions were, for me, what's fascinating, because no one really talks about them as much. I mean, I guess because you don't see them, right? So aerial screw aside, you know, if you've looked at the notebooks, Leonardo da Vinci is credited with inventing the ball bearing. Well, actually, not so much. I mean, there are some historians that say the ball bearing existed even in ancient Roman times, but Leonardo da Vinci's sketches were actually the first to put it to practical use. And ball bearings, nothing really works around it without ball bearings. So Leonardo da Vinci, well done. Parachutes as well. Leonardo da Vinci is credited with inventing the parachute, so always handy for modern air warfare.
If you find yourself needing to jump out of an aerial screw.
Exactly, there you go. But, you know, in the documentary, they were talking about machine guns and armored tanks. He was also quite responsible for designing, not machine guns as we know it, but, you know, muskets kind of strung together to fire in rapid succession.
I think, another thing about that clip before we move on is just that it only makes sense to you if you've seen The Last Supper.
The painting, of course.
Yeah, if you've seen it. And similarly, I think a lot of the things that you're describing really only make sense when you've seen it.
Yes.
Yeah, because I was just recalling...
Of course, even if you've seen The Last Supper, that clip shouldn't make any sense because it's just made up.
Ian McKellen says it, therefore.
Yes.
But I was just thinking about... there was one little display in the exhibition last year, which was basically like a battleship and demonstrating how you could rotate, you know, different... you could rotate the thing so that you could be shooting on all angles. You could be
right.
shooting all the way around.
Right.
And that's something that, see, even in my description of it, I've just bungled it because when you see it, it makes perfect sense. And you look at it, and it's again one of those things where you're like, you know, if it could work... It could work. That's what you think.
Well, I think a lot of his stuff was that, right? The idea that it could work. And a lot of it was ahead of its time. I mean...
And on that phrase, ahead of its time. But, I mean, what does that mean, ahead of its time? Does it just mean that, therefore, it couldn't work?
No. I think it means that people didn't have the money to test it out. So
does
take his... one of my favorite inventions of his that was never actually built, so I don't know if you can call it an invention, but his idea for the city of the future, right? So he was living in 1400s in Milan. Black Death plague was wiping out most of Europe. And he had this idea that... but they were wiping out cities more than villages. So he had this theory that something in cities made them more vulnerable to the disease, which was ahead of its time, given that the germ theory of disease didn't actually get established until the 20th century. So he was 600 years ahead of his time with ideas. So he devised this modern city where, you know, everything which is bad and kind of disease-like goes at the bottom level. So, you know, for sanitation, for easy removal of rubbish and all of that stuff and so on and so forth. So he actually designed this modern city of the future. And, you know, but at the time, there was no patron that was actually rich enough to build a city from scratch, right? You know, but he had, you know, canals for rapid waste disposal and water would be distributed using a hydraulic system that was essentially modern plumbing. And, you know, he couldn't do it himself. He didn't have the means to build such a modern city, but he came up with this idea in 1400, which is, so I think that's what it means by ahead of its time, because now you look back at the sketchbooks and everyone's like, hey.
No, I know, I get that, you know, I get the literal meaning of ahead of his time. I think what I'm asking is sort of a wider philosophical question. What does it mean to be a man ahead of your time? Because if you come up with all these great ideas, and if you could have, you know, gotten the elite of Milan into a safe city, provided somebody just had enough money, you know, what value did he bring at the time? Do you think that one man, a man such as Leonardo da Vinci, would have been enough, you know, enough of a, I guess, beacon of inspiration and rational thought and science in his time?
I think he was.
To sort of elevate everybody else.
So not everyone has that. A lot of people who are ahead of their time will get recognized after their time. But Da Vinci was recognized during his time. I mean, his colleagues, his patrons all recognized his genius and, you know, what he could do. And I think that's a rarity. It's like... it's like the Beatles. Everyone knew the Beatles were great even back then. It wasn't something we knew in retrospect, like so many other bands or artists or authors, right? We recognized that genius immediately, and so did his colleagues in the 1400s, 1300s and 1400s, right? So I think that's a rarity in itself, and I think that's part of what made Leonardo da Vinci great. So similar goes for politicians, for Gandhi, for Mandela, more recently, I guess, Aung San Suu Kyi. People kind of addressed that sense of greatness from the get-go, right?
I don't think we would have any better a handle on Leonardo da Vinci today than they would have in their time. Because I don't feel as if... See, again, you know, we're talking, we're establishing a lot of the good work that he did, but it's really hard to pin him down.
But
in any real way.
But he was hard to pin down even back then.
That's
right?
What
but
I mean.
I think he was intentionally mysterious that way. And I think he kept himself for whatever reason, whether he was a personal private man, whether he was a time traveler from the future who just, you know, settled in the 1300s and came up with all these things, whether he was an alien.
I find that so disappointing. And if he were an alien, then no. Why would you make him an alien?
That's why he had the big beard to cover half his face.
That's why he was so big and tall.
Mm,
the robes would have helped.
The robes.
So if you're taking anything away from today's show, it would be Leonardo da Vinci alien?
That is the question. Okay, so, you know, I had this interesting quote from Giorgio Vasari, who was his biographer, right? And he says about Leonardo da Vinci, "The most heavenly gifts seem to be showered on certain human beings. Sometimes supernaturally, marvelously, they all congregate in one individual. This was seen and acknowledged by all men in the case of Leonardo da Vinci, who had an indescribable grace in every effortless act and deed. His talent was so rare that he mastered any subject to which he turned his attention. He might have been a scientist if he had not been so versatile." And that was another interesting note about Leonardo da Vinci. Anything you read about him, he was a super nice guy. And that's what's shocking for the time, that he made no enemies. He made, you know, he wasn't confrontational. He got on with everyone.
We go back to the tortured artist thing again. I think if you go to any stereotype of tortured artist or nerdy genius scientist, in no way or form are they ever happy and are they ever nice.
And Leonardo da Vinci kind of broke that mold. Maybe that's why he achieved so much.
We've got somebody asking, do you say ahead of its time from hindsight or from the present moment?
Ahead of his time. Well, that's interesting. I would call people who are live in the present ahead of their time as well, in the sense that I think some of the ideas that Steve Jobs had probably were ahead of his time, and we'll probably see its execution or some of the statements he made. Same thing with Bill Gates. You know, and people at the time when they react to the statements are like, "You're crazy, man," and then 10 years down the line they're like, "Oh yeah, okay, he was right." So I think you can talk about ahead of its time. Ahead of his time or ahead of their time
it is
from
always,
the present.
It is always easier with hindsight.
It is a lot
it
easier
is incredibly
with
easier with yeah, hindsight. Yeah.
Because we don't have the arrogance of the present to think that we know it all and therefore say, "You're talking nonsense."
Correct. Yeah. No, but also, I mean, somebody else who wrote about things that were eerily accurate, Jules Verne.
Jules Verne. H.G. Wells. Okay, we haven't had Martian invaders yet, but yet being the key word.
No, but my point is, crazy person, but, you know, it's something that with our, you know, comfortable position now, we can look back and go, "Oh, wow, look at you, submarines."
Correct, yeah. But also with submarines, with ventures into space, with Leonardo da Vinci and a lot of his helicopter sketches and so on and so forth, we also look back and we get inspired to actually make those things happen. So then we're like, "Oh man, if you had the means, you could have made it happen back then." So then we go ahead of his time, right? So because that's the kind of stuff that inspires our work today, science fiction in particular, the kind of things NASA and stuff do based on novels they've read as a kid.
Also, it's an interesting thing to imagine, you know, him possibly having created those things in his time, because then by now we'd have flying cars.
I think we already do. I think the government just doesn't tell us.
So what's your big statement about Leonardo da Vinci?
That he is, if you want to be like anyone, intellectually speaking, I think Leonardo da Vinci is the person to emulate. It's only in the sense that, you know, we spend so much time these days kind of pursuing a single avenue for expertise
and excellence,
right? When in fact, okay, maybe he had a one-of-a-kind mind, but I'd like to think that we're all capable of it, and he just kind of exercised that mind in a very interesting way. It's like Vasari said, you know, whatever he seemed to touch, he seemed to be able to become an expert. And I don't believe in that magic and supernatural thing. I think it was a lot of persistence and hard work on the part of Leonardo da Vinci. I think he was a very clever guy, but he just kind of put that cleverness to good use and kind of dabbled and somehow made great, great things, right?
I think he's the only person that somebody could say jack of all trades about and master of all. No, right?
Yeah.
And not mean it negatively the way it's usually meant. Yeah. And that's a rarity. And I don't know if I agree with you that we're all capable of it. I think there are some people who are better suited to single-minded pursuits of greatness. And then there are your Leonardo da Vinci's. It's like not every delinquent dropout is Steve Jobs.
That is true.
Yeah, similarly,
some of them are just dumb.
Similarly, not every I'm going to change my focus now and do this is going to be Leonardo da Vinci, but he was a great.
True, fair enough. But I believe in the human potential.
Okay, stop making me look bad. All right, we've been talking about Leonardo da Vinci on this day, which is his birthday, right here on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.